Today we're beginning here on the top of Amud Aleph, four lines down. The Gemara says, "Umaytama gazru b'hu rabbonon." Based on what we saw in yesterday's daf, that the Beit Din shel Rabbi Gamliel was gozer with regards to the kuti, that the shechita was no good. What precipitated that change in approach towards the kutim? So Gemara says, "Ki had Rabbi Shim ben Elazar." The incident with Rabbi Shim ben Elazar, shadrei Rabbi Meir latu echam Rabbi Beit Kutai. Rabbi Meir sent him to purchase or to bring back wine from some kuti or some sellers that were kutim. Ashkechei ha'usaba, on the way to purchase the wine, he bumps into this elderly gentleman. Tosfot over here says, yesh mifarshim b'chol makom shu maskir ha'usaba hu Eliyahu. Some people say, whenever the Gemara says, this elderly gentleman, it's a reference to Eliyahu Navi. Says, v'lo efshar l'markein, he says, it's impossible to say this, b'perek manbem adikin. So he brings a case where it doesn't really fit into the story, it doesn't make sense in the story. In that way, he's somewhat dismissing this thesis that a Saba or a Saba means Eliyahu Navi in each case, but rather means some elderly gentleman. Amalei, v'samta sakin b'lo'echa imbal nefesh ata. The pasuk in its pashtut means you should place a knife next to your throat. Rashi over here says b'lo'echa next to your cheeks. In Baal Nefesh Ata, in the Pashtut of Pasuk, means that even if you have a good appetite and you want to eat, put the knife by your throat, meaning prevent yourself, stop yourself from engaging in this eating, even though it's something that's appealing to you. And similarly over here, as Rashi explains, he's saying put a knife next to your cheeks, according to Rashi, in Baal Nefesh Ata, if you are Adam Kasher, if you are someone who worries about these matters, someone who is careful about halacha, then you should be careful here as well and not purchase the wine from the kutim. He's indicating through this pasuk or hinting to him that he shouldn't be purchasing wine from the kutim. Halach Rabbi Shimon Elazar v'siper dvarim lifnei Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Shimon Elazar reported back to Rabbi Meir what he had heard from the Saba, v'gazar alehen. And then Rabbi Meir was gozer on them with regards to the wine. My taima. What was the issue, or what was it that this Saba was hinting to, telling him that there's a problem with the kutim? Amar Rav Nachum Vayitzak, Dmut Yonah Matsulahem Berosh Har Grizim. They found an image of a Yonah on the top of Har Grizim, Sheovdim Ota, that they were worshipping it. Tosafot brings a midrash that the Avodat Kochavim that they found was the Avodat Kochavim that Yaakov Avinu buried after the destruction of Shechem by Shimon HaLevi, by the brothers, and Yaakov says to them that you need to do away with all the Avodah Zarah that you took, so there they bury it next to Shechem. So the claim is that that buried Avodah Zarah is what they had found, or that's what they resurrected to be Avodah Zarah. Otherwise, it's just really a continuation of what the Psukim say in Menachem Bet, which was that they had one foot worshipping Hashem and one foot worshipping Avodah Zarah, and they never really let go of the Avodah Zarah. Rabbi Meir l'tamei dechayish l'miuta. And Rabbi Meir is l'shitato, that he worries about a miut. Rashi over here claims that the miut is the shomronim, or the kutiim, the minority of them live by Har Grizim. And so, even though those that are on Har Grizim are worshipping Avodah Zarah, nevertheless, that's not the majority of the kutiim. That's not the majority of those people that are designated as kutiim. And that's why it was a miut. You could easily just said that the ones that they found worshipping in Har Grizim were the miut, even though there were many who lived in Har Grizim. Only a minority of them worshipped the Avodah Zarah. And Rabbi Meir's l'shitato, which is that he's chayish l'miuta. It's based on a Mishnah in Yevamot, whereby a katan and a ktana, do we allow them to perform yibum? Because the possibility is that when they grow up, we might find that the katan is a saris, or we might find that the Tana is a ilonit, which means that they are unable to reproduce. If they're unable to reproduce, there's no mitzvah of yibum. So you're taking a risk by having them get married while they are minors, doing yibum while they're minors, that later on we'll get information that will invalidate the yibum in this situation. So the chachamim say we go ahead, because that's a minority, it's a very rare minority, we're not going to worry about it. Rabbi Meir is choshesh the miyuta and won't let them get married until we have evidence of the fact that he's not a saris and that she's not an ilonit. So Rabbi Meir l'tamei that says he was choshesh the miyut, the gazar ruba ata miyuta. Everybody goes around the rove, out of the miut, made the disqualified kutim completely. He made them into, or classified them as goyim with regards to wine. Even though it wasn't the majority of kutim that were engaged in this practice, even it was just the minority. B'gamliel beitino nami k'Rabbi Meir sevirlu. Rabbi Gamliel and beitino also subscribed to this view of Rabbi Meir. Therefore, they were also gozer with regards to shchita. That also might have influence on whether you think it's Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne versus Rabbi Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi, because over here it seems to be that he is following the position of Rabbi Meir, which would then seem to indicate that he is after Rabbi Meir. On the other hand, it could just be that it means that they had the same view. Rabbi Meir is the one who, as the Baal HaTosfot would say, throughout Shas, is the one associated with this opinion. So even though Rabbi Gamliel might have been older or before Rabbi Meir, nevertheless, they ascribe that position to Rabbi Meir because he's the one known to have it. So in that way, he solves that problem as to why that may not be conclusive as the fact that it was Rabbi Gamliel, the son of Rabbi Yehuda Nasi. And he also points out that why did Rabbi Meir only deal with Yayin if Shechit was up for grabs? Shechita is much more serious. It's a Din D'oraita. Yayin is only a Din D'rabbanan. So why was Rabbi Meir dealing with Yayin when Rabbi Gamliel was dealing with Shechita? Elaim Ken, you think that it's Rabbi Gamliel of Yavne who came before Rabbi Meir, and then it would make sense. So this was part of the discussion that the Baal HaTosfot had in their argument against Rashi, which Rabbi Gamliel, Ubeit Dino, we were speaking about. Pashtei Dekra B'Mai K'tiv. So it says, okay, that's this nice drasha that this individual, this Saba, made in order to warn Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar against buying wine from the Kutim, but really, what is the Pashtuta Pasuk? How to read the Pasuk? And of course, the way they explain the Pasuk is also not the Pashtuta Pasuk. It is a drasha. But what he's asking is, how do Chazal interpret the Pasuk? It says, B'talmid yoshev lifnei rabo. It's for a Talmid that's sitting before his Rebbe. D'tani Rabbi Chia. Ki teshev lilchom. So again, these are the psukim immediately before the Pasuk that we quoted before. When one sits down to eat, et moshel, with a ruler, with someone of importance. Bin tavin et asher lefanecha. One should consider diligently that which is in front of him or the person they are breaking bread with. So if you're going to sit down with people of importance, you better know what you're getting yourself into, understand what the circumstances is and who is in front of you. Samta sakin biloecha, and put a knife to your throat. Imbal nefesh ata, even if you are someone of a good appetite or someone wants to eat, you have to consider the trade-offs here in terms of joining this meal and eating together with this individual versus what type of obligations or problems are going to arise from your engaging in this meal. So that's the Pashtuta Pasuk. Now the Gemara is going to give their Pashtuta Pasuk, which is the Drush of Chazal. Im yodea Talmid birabo, if a Talmid knows about his Rebbe, shildelach zirlo tam, then he knows how to respond to him. Bin, go ahead and ask. Go ahead and query of the Rebbe. So now they are darshing the chom to eat instead of being to eat. It's rather milchamta shel Torah, the battle of Torah, or being engaged in Torah, whether you say lachma shel Torah. Either way, the drasha is a play not on eating, but on engagement in Torah. And it says that if a Talmid has questions, he has things that are bothering him in that which his Rebbe said. If he knows and understands that his Rebbe can answer him, then he should query. He should ask the questions. Vim lav, if it's not the case, tavin et asher lefanecha. Understand what you're looking at. Samta sakin b'lo'echa. Know what you're looking at and put a knife to your throat, mean that if your Rebbe can't answer the question, don't ask the question. If you're going to pose questions to the Rebbe and he's not going to be able to answer, you're going to embarrass him and it's going to make it difficult for him, know how to keep quiet. Know how to be silent in this situation. Because first of all, you're not going to get an answer anyway. And the only thing you're going to do is serve to undermine your Rabbi. Vim bal nefesh ata, and if you're someone who needs an answer, or you're unable to withhold yourself, parosh himenu, you should separate yourself from him, meaning move on to another Rebbe. So if you are in this situation where you need to, you have an appetite for asking these questions and you can't hold yourself back, go to another person who can answer those questions, rather than embarrassing your Rebbe who can't answer those questions. So that's the way Chazal interpret the Pasuk. Rabbi Yitzchak ben Yosef, Shadrei Rabbi Abahu. So this is a much later incident where Rabbi Yitzchak ben Yosef sent Rabbi Abahu, Latuya Chamrem Vekutai. So this is obviously after the takana of Rabbi Meir, as well as Rabbi Gamliel Beit Dino, and nevertheless Rabbi Yitzchak ben Yosef is sending Rabbi Abahu to go get wine from the Beit Kudai. Ashkei Usaba, again, an elderly individual intercepted him. Amalei Leitkan Shomrei Torah. The people who live here are not Shomrei Torah, they don't keep the mitzvot. There is some underlying problem here that you're not aware of, and I'm just making you aware of it. Halach Rabbi Yitzchak v'siper devarim lifnei Rabbi Abahu. He went and reported this to Rabbi Abahu. Halach Rabbi Abahu v'siper devarim lifnei Rabbi Ami v'Rabbi Asi. And he told over all of this to Rabbi Ami v'Rabbi Asi, who are the G'dolei Ador. Lo zazu misham ad sha'asum ovdei kochavim gmurim. At that point, then they declared that the Kutim are completely not Jewish. They had the same status as an Oved Kochavim. Lamai, what nafkamina does that have? Ilishchita v'yayin nesech. If it's for shchita and yayin nesech, mehatam gazrubu rabbonon. That was already handled by Rabbi Meir, who was gozer on them by regards to yayin. And Rabbi Gamliel Beit Dino, who was gozer by shchita. Inu gazor v'lo kablu minayu. They put the takanot into place, and it was not accepted. Atu Rabbi Ami v'Rabbi Yasi gazru v'kablu minayu. They put it into place, and then it was accepted. Rashi claims over here that this has to do with a principle inside of Takanot and Gezerot, which is that you're only allowed to put in place a Gezerah, so that Tzibur yochol la'amod ba. You only put in place Gezerot where the Tzibur can abide by those Gezerot, or those Takanot. And what Rashi claims is that in the time of Rabbi Meir, in the time of Rabbi Gamliel, the people were not able to abide by it. There was too much interaction, too much trade between the Kutim and the Jews, that if you put in place the Takana, it would have made it impossible for them at that time to live. And therefore, people did not accept the Gzeira. Later on, in the time of Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yasi, there had been more fallout between them, and there was less commercial interaction between them. And at that point already, they could put the Gzeira in place, and it would have taken hold. The way Rashi explains it is that, at first, it didn't take hold, because people did not accept it. It was too difficult. So that goes to this principle, which is, if the Tzibur can't abide by it, then the Gezerah, the Takana, fails. So it did fail because people couldn't abide by it. By the time Rabbi Ami and Rashi became much more plausible to institute something like this and not have the people reject it, and that's what happens, they accept it at that point in time, and therefore the Takana Gezerah went into place. That's the way Rashi explains it. I would have simply explained it that Rabbi Meir's Shita is premised on a halacha of Choshishin Lemiut. And Rabbi Gamliel Beit Dino, the Gemara said, also took up that sheet of Rabbi Meir of Choshishin Lemiut. By the time they get to Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi, it's no longer a miut, it's already a rov. And so the difference would be that Rabbi Gamliel and Rabbi Meir premised their Takanah Gzerah on this minority view, which is that minorities have impact. And by the time Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Asi, already the rov of the Kutim are engaged in this Avodah Zarah, and that's what makes the difference. We don't subscribe to the halacha of Choshishin Lemiut or Rabbi Meir's Shita, and so that's why it was rejected. By the time Rabbi Ami Rabbi Yassi, the Takanah Gzeirah is put in place because it's the rov already, and then afterwards I saw that the Ramban explains it in that manner, which is that it has to do with the halachic premise of Rabbi Meir and Rabbi Gamliel's position, which we don't paskin like of Choshishin Lemiut, whereas Rabbi Ami and Rabbi Yassi were not relying on that. They were doing it because it was the rov already, and that's why we accept their Gzeirah Takana, not the earlier ones. My Ovdei Kochavim Gmurim. What does it mean that they are full-fledged non-Jews in this situation? Amar Rav Nachman Bar Yitzchak, Levatel Rishut, Veliten Rishut. As Nafkamino, with regards to Hilchot Shabbat, by the cases of Eruvin. By Eruv Chatzerot and Shitufei Mivoot, we have a problem in these areas because there's joint ownership of the area. So even though Min HaTorah is designated as a Rishut HaYachid, a Chatzer, where you have many houses that enter into a Chatzer, or empty out into the Chatzer, so you have joint ownership of the Chatzer, but it's still a private domain. This is not public thoroughfare in any way, shape, or form. Nevertheless, it has the trappings of a Rishut HaRabim. Rishut HaRabim is an area where we have shared usage, shared ownership of the area, and so a Chatzer starts to look similar to Rishut HaRabim. And a Mavoi even more so. A Mavoi, which is a number of Chatzerot, share their access to the Mavoi, which is a side road that comes off of the main thoroughfare. So again there, you have multiple ownerships of a location. It's still a private domain. Nevertheless, it's easy to see how people would confuse the matter and say, well, if I can walk and carry in my chatzer, if I can walk and carry in my boy, where there's joint ownership, why can't I walk into the Rishut HaRabim, where there's also joint ownership? So the Chachamim established what's called an Eruv Chatzerot and a Shituf Mevaot, which is basically a lachic way to create a joint ownership in these areas so that it becomes as if there is a single ownership. And in that way, it will remind the people that the reason you can carry here is because we made it into a single unit, a single owned place, and therefore that's why it's a Rishut Yachid, as opposed to the Rishut Rabim, which is not that way. The manner by which you do this is usually by joining in together in a meal or some form of food together, and then by doing so, you create this joint ownership. So one person will keep a Eruv Chatzerot in his house, and everybody will be partners in that, and in that way, it'll create the joint ownership. Sometimes, someone forgets to join in the Eruv Chatzerot, and now you have a problem. You come to Shabbat, and they forgot one of these guys to join the Eruv Chatzerot, and you're not going to be able to carry unless he's able to join. On Shabbat, you can't do kinyanim. You can't bring them into the Eruv Chatzerot after the fact on Shabbat. So there is a mechanism for getting around that problem, and that's called Bitul Rishut. If he relinquishes his ownership in the property to the one who's holding the Eruv Chatzerot, it would work. The possibility of doing that is only available to Jews, not to non-Jews. If it is a Jew, he has the right to relinquish his ownership and grant it to the individual, and thereby allowing everybody to carry there. If it's a goy, the only way to do that is to be socher, is to rent his property from him, lease the property from it. You can't do it with Bitul Rishut. The Gemara tells us the reason they did this was because they wanted to make it unpleasant to live together in a single chatzer with a goy. By making it difficult for you, because now you have to rent from him, rather than having all the parties join in the Erev Chatzerot, or being mevatel their Rishut, here you have to actually purchase rights from this goy every Shabbat in order to make an Erev Chatzerot. And in that way, we were trying to dissuade you from living in this way, so that you don't learn from their behavior, meaning that it's not such a good thing to have these mixed neighborhoods because of the negative influences of living amongst the goyim. Again, obviously we're speaking about in a time where the negative influences were much more significant and they possibly were worshipping Avodah Zarah, doing other things that were serious violations of the Torah. We're not necessarily talking about places of civility. And so therefore this was a dissuasion. So the assignment of the kuti, like an Oved Kochavim, that is what Rav Nachman Yitzchok says has impact over here. So just like someone who's Michalal Shabbat can't join an Erev Chatzerot, and just like someone who is a goy can't join an Erev Chatzerot, so too a kuti can't join an Erev Chatzerot, and you have to rent this property from him. Ucha de Tanya, and similar to a Braita, Israel Mumar. If you have a Israel who is a Mumar, the Shabbat, he does not keep Shabbat, but he's Mishamer Shabbatoba Shuk. He is only Mechalo Shabbat Bitzin'ah, privately. He's not Mechalo Shabbat Bifarhesia. Mivatel Rishut Vinotein Rishut. He has the right to relinquish his ownership or give over his ownership to one of the Jews in the Chatzer. She'enu Mishamer Shabbato B'Shuk. If he does not keep Shabbat Bifarhesia, meaning he's violating Shabbat in the Shuk, he's doing it Bifarhesia. Enu Mivatel Rishut Vinotein Rishut. He does not have the right then to relinquish control or grant control of his property for Erubay Chatzerot, Shitufei Mivot. And by a non-Jew, it's until you rent it from him. And over here, the Mechalel Shabbat Befarhesia has a din like a goy. We see that by many matters, including Stam Yenam, as well as here by Eruv and other matters. He gains a status like a goy when he's Mechalel Shabbat Befarhesia. By Shabbat, you need Befarhesia and not Bitsina, because by Shabbat, there's a isur, there's a violation, but the public violation of Shabbat is then becomes an edut or a testimony, a false testimony, that the oath that exists between Bnei Yisrael and Kodesh Baruch Hu was somehow breached or has been abrogated, or the fact that, as Rashi said before, that when you keep Shabbat, it's an oath, it's a siman that Hashem created the world in 6 days and rested, desisted from work on the seventh day. It's evidence of the fact that you believe that God created the world and interacts with the world. When you do the opposite, then you're testifying falsely to the fact that God did not create the world in 6 days and rest on the seventh day. If you do it privately, then that's an issue between you and God. When you do it publicly, that's testimony. If you're giving a dut to the contrary, and therefore you are disqualified, you would get treated like a goy. And that's what we mean over here too. The kuti that's treated like a goy has impact that by the garrets to Eruvei Chatzerot, that she's Vei Mavot, he can't join in, he has to be rented from, he can't simply be Mevatel Rishut. Ketzad, what's the scenario? Amarlo Rishuti Kenui Alach. Rishuti Mevutel Alach. He says that my property is granted to you in ownership, or I relinquish my control of the property to you. Kana, it works. Veinu tzarich liskot. And you don't have to make a kinyan, you don't have to actually take over the property. Simple relinquishment of control, or a statement is enough here, because this, in essence, is really a halachic fiction in order to prevent a problem. The whole idea is that the chatzer, which is a yirshut yachid, we are not allowing you to carry there because of the possibility of you matching between the chatzer and Rishut Rabim, being indifferent towards them and then carrying in the Rishut Rabim. So all we need you to do is understand that something's different about the chatzer. And we do that by having you either join in the Erubay Chatzerot, or having you relinquish control over your property here to make it into a Rishut Yachid or a semblance of a Rishut Yachid, so you won't confuse that with the Rishut Rabim. So here it's sufficient for you just simply to be mevato your ownership, to grant your ownership there. He doesn't have to make a kinyan to gain that ownership. Rabbi Zeira and Rabbi Asi ikla lepundaka deyoy. They went to a bed and breakfast in a location called Yoy. Aita the gemayu beitzim hamitzumakot. They brought before them eggs that were heavily roasted, biyayin, and then placed in wine afterwards. The way Rashi describes it, these are heavily roasted eggs that then dry out or dry up, and then they take them and then mash them and make them into almost like a scrambled egg with wine. Rabbi Zera lo achal. Rabbi Zera refused to eat it. Rabbi Asi achal. On the other hand, Rabbi Asi ate it. Amalei Rabbi Zera lo Asi velo chayish mar la torovet demai. Aren't you worried about a mixture of demai? Clearly from the question that's being posed by Rabbi Zera, it's an indication that the bread and breakfast they stayed at was owned by an Amaretz. An Amaretz who is questionable as to whether they take off Shumot and Masrot. There's some suspicion as to whether they really do that or don't do that. And so Rabbi Zera refused to eat from that which he served them because he was afraid that the Yayin was something that required Shumot and Masrot to remove from it, and the Amaretz didn't take it off. Now, it's known as demai. There's a whole Masechet demai that deals with this, which is that by Amei Aretz, we are uncertain. When they did a survey or a census of the Amei Aretz, they found out that Rov Amei Aretz Masrim Heim. The majority of Amei Aretz do take off Trumot or Masrot. But there is a minority, and not an insignificant minority. When we say majority, it could be 61%, 65%. So there's a not insignificant minority that didn't take off Trumot or Masrot. Now, the truth is, by Truma Gdola, everybody took it off. First of all, it doesn't take anything to off Truma Gdola, because even Chita Achat Koteret Tzedakri, smallest amount takes care of the problem. So it's really no loss to you to take off Truma Gdola, as well as they know that it's Mita Bidei Shemayim if you don't take it off. What the Amei Aretz didn't realize was that by Maaser Rishon, you have the same problem. Because Maaser Rishon requires that the Levi take off Trumat Maser from it, and Trumat Maser has the same status as Trumat Gdola, which is as a Chiyum Mita Bidei Shemayim. But they don't think of it in that way. They think of Trumat Gdola and they take care of it. They forget about the Trumat Maser and everything else is just monetary obligations and not a real Chiyuv. And so therefore I'm not going to do it. They're willing to withhold those payments and keep it for themselves because there's no real punishment like Chiyum Mita Bidei Shemayim. And they're thinking incorrectly because of the Trumat Maser that's involved. But because of that significant minority, they were gozer by demai that you should be mafrish trumot de masrot misafek. Again, truma gdola you didn't have to take off because rova mayaretz were certainly taking off truma gdola. It's not something hard to do. Even you yourself could have done it with the simple removal of a chita achat. It's not a big deal. The other areas are we're trying to deal with the problem of tevel. So what we require you to do is take off maaser rishon, separate out the Trumat Maser from it. The Trumat Maser is problematic because there's a Chiyum Mita Bidei Shemayim to consume it. So that you'd have to take care of and give to the Kohen and make sure that it's not a part of your produce anymore. The Maaser Rishon, the remaining 9/10 of the Maaser Rishon that you separated out, you can keep for yourself because it's Motzi Michavereo Lavaraya. The Levi is going to have to come and prove to you that these grains or this item requires hafrasha from it, it's still tevel. If he can prove that, then he can take it. If he can't prove it, he can't take the money away from you. He can't take the maaser rishon from you. The same thing with maaser ani. Maaser ani is a monetary obligation. So you'll separate it out, and then you'll keep it for yourself unless the anim can prove that you're obligated to give it to them. So in a sense, there's no monetary loss here, just a requirement that you remove it. The only thing you're losing is the chumat maaser, but that's risky because of the chiyuv mita bidei shamayim. By years that it was maaser sheni, you would redeem it, and we would allow a certain amount of dispensation and valuations and all sorts of things to redeem it onto the monies of maaser sheni. In addition, the monies of maaser sheni are yours. You can eat with that money up in Yerushalayim. So you're not really losing anything. But in that way, you're poter the items from tevel. So we ask you, when there's demayer, a safek by the Amei Aretz, to manage that situation. Do all of the separations in order to remove the problems that are there. But monetarily, you're going to lose very little because of the fact that you're going to keep the majority of what it is that you separate out. So that's what's called demay. So what he's mentioning over here is that you have a tarovet demay. Here you have eggs, which clearly do not require trumot de maserot, and you have yayin that does. So now you have a mixture between eggs and wine. And what Rabbi Zeira is saying to Rabbi Ami is, don't you worry about demay even when it's in a tarovet. You could have believed that in a tarovet we don't worry about demay because it's batel to the mixture as a whole. So now you have a mixture here, we say forget about demay. Demay is already a safek, and now you have a safek inside of a mixture, we say it's batel and let it go. Or do we say that you worry about demay in a tarovet because demay alone would have been worried about it? Now in a tarovet you have to worry about it. Amalei lava datai says, I didn't think about it. I wasn't really focused on it, and I should have. So then Amar Rabbi Zera, Efsha Gazuela Tarovet Demai, Umistayim Milta de Rav Asi the Mechali Sura. How could it be that the Zerat Chachamim, Tanat Chachamim with regards to Demai, not only applies to standalone Demai, but applies to Tarovet? And if that's the case, it is Isur to eat it. And then it turns out that Rav Asi ate something that was Isur. And as we said before, when it comes to the animals of the tzaddikim, the chamor of Pinchas ben Yair, which refused to eat the tevel that was being fed in because they didn't have trumot masrot taken off of it, that Hashem doesn't allow them to trip up to have problems, then tzaddikim atzvam lo koshakein, tzaddikim themselves, certainly Hashem should afford them that protection. We saw yesterday in the Balei Tosafot, and I noted that many places in Shas, the Balei Tosafot say this, it only has to do with the ingestion of isur, eating something that's asur. It's not a generic statement that God always protects the tzaddikim from making mistakes. He protects them from eating something that would defile them, because that's considered to be ma'us, it's considered to be significant. So in that way, He protects them. If that's true, that He protects them, how could it be that Rav Asi actually ate from something that was isur? That's the nature of Rabbi Zera's question to himself. That is also what connects it to our Gemara over here. The Gemara before spoke about this idea of not consuming isur, and therefore the memrot that we're going to see here are not connected to Chulin at all, or to our Gemara at all. They simply have that same issue that arises in them. How could it be that a tzaddik would eat something that is otherwise asur? So that's what Rabbi Zera poses the question for himself, and therefore he wants to find a reason to protect or to absolve Rav Ami of any wrongdoing over here. And that's what he says. Nafak Rabbi Zera dak vashkach. Rabbi Zera went out to search and he found. Ditznan, we have a Mishnah. Hakreach yayin latet letoch hamurius. Person purchases wine to put into the fish hash. O letoch alontit. Or to put it into the alontit. It's a Mishnah in the Gemara in Shabbat and Daf Kuf Mem, where the Mishnah that discusses the anomalin and the olontit, were these wine mixtures of drinks. And the olontit is made up of wine mixed with filtered water and balsam oil. So you bought the wine to use it for that. Or karshinim, you bought beans, lasot mehem tchinin, to make grist out of them. Adashim, you bought lentils, lasot mehem risisim, to make groats out of them. Chayav mishum demai. You have to separate out trumot masrot, because these items that you're purchasing from the Amaretz are standalone items before you put them into the mixture. So even though you're buying them to mix them, but when you buy them as an independent item, and therefore you're required to take off trumot masrot. And if you know for certain Trumot the Masrot weren't taken off of them, or the Amaretz tells you that he did not take them off, then you have to take it off Vadai. There's no question that you have to remove Trumot the Masrot. V'hein atzman mutarim ipnei she'en tarovet. On the other hand, if you purchase it already mixed, you purchase it already made, then you don't have to take off Trumot the Masrot demai, because it's already a tarovet. It's already a mixture. So if you buy the morius, if you buy the fish ash with the wine already in it, or the alontit already mixed with the wine, or the tchinin, or the risusim, with the beans and lentils mixed into it already, there you don't have to take off Trumot Masrot. From here it sounds like they were not gozer on tarovet of demai, and then that would be a limud zchut on Ravasi, because that means that the case by the pundak, because she served them a mixture, a tarovet of yayin and eggs, and since it's a tarovet, it would not require Trumot Masrot be taken off of it as demai. And that's why Ravasi, in eating it, really didn't eat something that would have been a sur tachat the gzera. The reason is because the whole removal of demai already is a din mi safek. And the safek is even something that's a miut. It's a miut that's motsui, significant miut, so we are choshesh for the miut. But we said Rove Amayaretz are taking off Shumot and Masrot, so we're already being choshesh for a safek in a minority. If you add on top of that an additional mixture, tarovet, where there's a bitul of sorts of the item into the mixture as a whole, over there the chachamim were not goes there to be choshesh for the miyut in those situations, both the possibly the difficulty of separating out the stuff once it's mixed or figuring out how much volume is in there, as well as the fact that we can rely on the majority in those situations. They were metakin in situations where it's obvious and clear that you're purchasing items that could be subject to Trumat Masrot. Things are already mixed in, they did not make such a requirement. So Gemara says, "Velo gazru al tarovet demai?" Is that really true? They were not gozer in mixtures of demai. Vatanya, anotein lishkenoto isa lafot. He gives to his neighbor dough in order to bake. Ukedera livashel. Or he gives him a pot full of materials that he wants to cook in order to cook for him. So he doesn't have his own oven, he doesn't have his own stove. So he goes to his neighbor in order to help him out. So he says, here, I'm giving you the dough. Can you please bake it for me? I'm giving you the pot full of my stew. Can you put it on the oven? Eino chosheish l'seor v'tavlin sheba. He doesn't have to worry about the rising agent and the spices that are in it. Lo mishum shvit, v'lo mishum ma'aser. Not because of shvit and not because of ma'asrot, meaning that we assume that whatever you gave to him, you got back. So the fear you might have is that he would swap it out. You handed him a sourdough, a rising agent. You handed him spices in order to make the dough or the stew that you're putting there. And he takes them and he says, you know what, I'll keep these for myself. I'll put my own in there. And then you have a problem because the spices would otherwise should be subject to a din of Trumot and Masrot. And now if he puts them into your pot, his stuff, you'd have to worry about the fact that he might have swapped it out. We say that we don't worry about that. We don't worry about him swapping out these items. And then they have the remainder of the Braita, which is where the question is from, which is, Bimamala asili mishilaychi. She says to her, make me of your stuff. Hoshesh l'sor v'tavlin sheba. Then you didn't need to worry about the sor and the tavlin. Mishum shvit to mishum aser. You have to worry about what she's putting in there at that point. Even though if you got a tarovet back, why should you worry about it? So there's an obvious difference between the resha and the seifa, which is how engaged is the person in the making of the item, or how much freedom are they given in the making of the item. And that's exactly what the Gemara answers over here. Shani otam. Over there it's different. The kevin to kamarla asi li mishalaychi. Make it of your own. Kemanda ori v'yadayim dami. It's as if you mixed it yourself. Meaning that if you get a tarovet, the tarovet, you don't have to deal with demai in a tarovet. What you're not allowed to do, and we saw that in the Braita before, is take separate items and then mix them together intentionally to make them into tarovet in order to avoid the problem of demai. We said if you purchase wine, even though you're going to put that wine into the morius, into the fish hash, you still have to deal with the yayin as yayin of demai. But you're putting it, mixing it together. So why not just mix it and forget about it? That's what's called mevatel isur dechatchila. That's where you're trying to take away the problem intentionally. You had it as a standard item, and now you're mixing it. So the same thing is true here. When you hand the items to the individual and say to her, go ahead and make it of your own stuff, then when she takes her own spices and puts them into the tarovet, it's no longer a case where you got a tarovet back, why should you worry about it? You basically gave her a certain amount of permission, and she becomes, in essence, your proxy in this situation. And your proxy now had standalone yayin, or standalone, whatever the item is, spices that are here, and therefore, when she mixes them together, it's as if she's doing it on your behalf, and it's as if she's doing it, the chatchila, mixing it, and therefore the obligation of demai does not dissipate in that situation, because you had it as a standalone item before, not you, but your proxy did, and therefore your chayav when she returns it to you. So the difference is in the instructions that you gave. If you hand them all the materials and just tell them, can you bake it, can you cook it, then we assume they use the materials you gave, and you don't have to worry about what you got back. On the other hand, if you give them the materials but say to them, you make it on your own, or you take care of it, then we do worry about the problem of demai, even though it's a tarovet. Prior to the tarovet, it was problematic, and the person was acting on your behalf before it was already a tarovet. And that's why you're chayav in demai, and that's why this is a differentiated case. Tosfot over here asks a question which does have major nafkamino d'alocha, which is, he says, mashma the tavlin chayvin b'maser. Based on this writer that we quoted, it makes it sound like spices are chayavot in maser. Otherwise, what's the question over here? The only question is if they swap them out, that there's a problem of shumot masrot. Otherwise, if they're not chayav in masrot, why do you have to worry about it? B'tema, the perek bas siman and nida, we're going to see, t'nan chosh chayav b'maser metameh tumat ochlim. Anything that is subject to masrot also has a din of tumat ochlim. Bor varotev, t'nan ve'akipa mitztarfim letameh tumat ochlim. Kamar Gemara, my kippah, tavlin. Alma tavlin, inlem tumat ochlim, el yedei tziruf. The tavlin by themselves do not have a din of tumat ochlim. They can be mitztaref to other food items to get them to the requisite size or shiur for tumat ochlim. So only as a secondary item do they add into the shiur. But as a primary item, they don't get the tumat ochlim. So then how can we claim over here that tavlin are chayavot and masrot if they don't have a din of tumat ochlim? The Gemara already created a parallel between these two items and said, if you have tumat ochlim or if you have maser, the two indicate the other one is true. So now, if you see over here there is masrot, then why isn't there tumat ochlim on a standalone basis for spices? Why is it only when they're added to something else as a secondary item do they become problem of tumat ochlim? It says, Yesh lamar b'shum demaser de kamaracha lo koya tavlin ela se'or. So Tosfot avoids the problem by saying that the issue of masrot here is only on the dough, or the sourdough, not on the tavlin. He says shvi'it would apply to both, because ochel adam is not relevant by shvi'it. Even ochel behema is subject to shvi'it. Therefore shvi'it would apply to spices. So that does have a nafkamina with regards to when you have things like basil and other things that people grow in order to use them, what is their status in terms of trumot and masrot? It might have to do with the way that you're going to use them. If you're going to take basil and put it into a salad, the basil in the salad will be chayav in trumot and masrot, because you're going to eat them the way they are and you're going to utilize them in your salad. On the other hand, if they are solely made for the purpose of drying them out and then making them into spices, in that situation you may not be chayav in trumot and masrot. When you put basil into a tomato salad, then you're going to eat the basil as a part and parcel of the tomato salad. When you put it as a spicing, you're trying to use it as a flavor, not as an ochel. So if you have a little basil plant, or you have mint that you keep or you grow, people grow these in their garden and grow them on their windowsills, and then you take them out, one to put in your tea, to put in your salads, over there they will require trumot masrot, because you're taking them as is and putting them into your salad. You're not making them into spices to be dried out and made into spices that will be used later on. There you might be patur from trumot masrot. Rafram offers a different solution, which is shiny se'or v'tavlin deletaima ovid. That se'or and tavlin are different because they are made for their flavor, v'taima lo botil, and the flavor doesn't go away. And as Rashi notes over here, taima lo botil means the fishi hu mitakena kol v'hu aikar, because the flavoring is the majority or the prominent part of this dish, and therefore the flavor takes over as being a primary aspect, as opposed to a case of wine in morios, or wine that is put into beitzim, where the wine is just an accompaniment. It's not the majority or the ikar of the dish. Over there, we would say that in a tarovet, we don't worry about demai. So because in this situation of the prominence of the se'or and the tavlin as being the ikar of the dish, we don't say that the tarovet wipes out the issue of demai, and the issue of demai stays on the table. But in situations where it's a real tarovet and they get subsumed in the dish and they're there to flavor it, but they're not the ikar of the dish, Over there we would say that Tarobet Demai is not subject to this Takanat Chachamim to be mafrish from it. So now the Gemara says, a sidebar over here, which is now we said that you don't worry about people swapping out things. And is that really true? We don't worry about it when you hand something over to an Amaretz. We don't worry about them swapping it out for their own and therefore giving you a problematic item back. But it's not. We have a Mishnah in Demai that says, Notein lechamuto, person who hands over to his mother-in-law, Maseret shu notein la, he has to take off Masrot from that which he gives her, Vet shu notel mimena, and that which he takes back from her, Mipnei shechashuda mechalefet hamitzkalkel, because she's chashud to swap out things that go bad. So here the situation is that the son-in-law is handing over flour or whatever materials it is for his mother-in-law to work on and to cook and to make into something good. So we say, first of all, you have to take off Shumot to Masrot from that which you give her because she may end up keeping it. And then she's going to be in violation of eating Tevel. But you're going to be the cause of that. We'll see later on, there is an opinion that says, too bad. She stole. She's a Ramai. She's a thief. So then why should you have to take off Shumot to Masrot to protect the Ramai from doing the wrong thing? So that might be an opinion. But nevertheless, the Brit Tanakama here believes that that's not the case. And you do have to take off Shumot to Masrot to protect her. You also have to take off Shumot to Masrot from that which you get back, at least me Demai, because she might have swapped it out, kept your stuff that already had Shumot to Masrot taken off of it, was not Tevel, but she handed you back stuff that was Tevel, and therefore now you have to deal with the Tevel that she gave you back. So in that way you have to take off Shumot to Masrot from what you give her, and from what you get back from her. So in the Mishnah it sounds like we're worried about her swapping it out. Which is exactly what the Mishnah says. Because she swaps out that which goes bad. And the Gemara says, Hatam kedetanya taimo. There the reason is spelled out. The reason is in the Mishnah, but it's more explicated over here by Rabbi Yehuda. Rabbi Yehuda, Rotzei bitakanat bita ubushame mechatana. She wants to make sure her daughter looks good, and she's embarrassed from her son-in-law. Here, her son-in-law handed her stuff to do, and she burnt it. She ruined it. So now if she hands back the burnt or ruined item, it's going to make her daughter look bad. It's going to be embarrassed because she did this to her son-in-law's stuff. So of course she doesn't want to do that. She swaps it out in order to make it look good, in order to give him back something that's nice, well-cooked, and makes her daughter look good. And also she won't be embarrassed from the son-in-law. So over there, there's a reason that she wants to do this. It's not that stam she would steal or she'd swap it out. It's in the unique case where there's a relationship that is tenuous already, and she's afraid of doing something wrong. So only when it's an upgrade, and when she's benefiting him, would she do it. So again, there, it's a unique circumstance that surrounds the context in which it is found. It's not a general principle that people swap things out. It's just that in this context, they would swap it out because of the issues that arise. Alma lo chayshinen, is that really true? That we only worry about it in this context, not in general, but it's none. Notein le pundakit shelo ma'aseret shu notein la, ve'etcha nutel mimena. If a person who lives in a bed and breakfast or lives in this hostess's house, many of the rabbonon who are learning by the yeshiva used to board by families that were there, so we'll call that a pundakit. So over here, he hands her flour or stuff to work on to make him his meal, his hot meal or his hot bread, and she takes it. He has to take off masrof when he gives her. Vetcha no tell me mena. And that what she takes back, mivnei shechashuda umechalefet. We suspect that she might swap it out. So again here, this has nothing to do with a contextual relationship. It's not a mother-in-law and son-in-law where she's trying to cover up for her daughter. Here it sounds like she does it no matter what. Even for people that she's not related to, people that she doesn't have a relationship with, she would swap it out. Hatam name moriya ba'amra. Over there, she justifies to herself that she just do this. Here you can read it in one of two ways. The way Rashi reads it is, it's a statement. The Barbe Rav should eat the fresh bread. And I should eat the stale bread. Meaning that she bakes the bread for this Rabbonan and he didn't come home yet. So it starts to cool off and now it's not a little bit stale, it's a little bit older. And now she bakes another bread of her own stuff. So she says, let me give him the fresh bread and I'll eat the stuff before. The way Rashi's reading it, it's a noble thing that she's doing, that she wants to give to the Barbe Rav and hand him the best item. The Baal Tosafot say it doesn't fit into the words and it doesn't read so well. And the Baal Tosafot would read it as a rhetorical question, which is, Barbe Rav lechol chamima, v'ana lechol krira? He should get the fresh stuff. I should get the bad stuff. Meaning, I'm the one making the effort. He just handed me the raw materials. I'm the one baking. I'm the one cooking. I'm doing all this. And so then she justifies to herself, I should get the good stuff. Let him get the stale stuff. Why should he be the beneficiary of all my work? So because of that, she justifies herself, and then she swaps it out. So there again, there's specific context or situation in why she swaps it out. Rashi reads it again as a nichuta, as a statement of fact. The Baal Tosfot, as he says, Mefresh Rabbeinu Menachem Debitzi Me'akamar, he reads it as a rhetorical question. That's a different reason then. It's a question like whether, according to Rashi, she's doing something noble, or according to the Baal Tosfot, she's justifying some bad behavior over here, justifying the fact that she's swapping out the better stuff for the stuff that she will give to the Bar Beirav. Whereas by neighbors, according to Rashi, we wouldn't worry about this because they're not relying on each other all the time. As opposed to the hostess over here, that she feels that the Bar Beirav is relying on her, there she's more heter l'tova. But by the case of neighbors, where it doesn't happen all the time, we wouldn't worry about it. Whereas the Rabbeinu Gershom formulates it from the opposite perspective, which is an aksanya is not a long-term relationship, as opposed to neighbors where there is a long-term relationship. Or the way that the Baal Tosafot phrase it is, because that's the normal way of interaction between neighbors, and there's a quid pro quo. And therefore she doesn't justify her position because people expect to be giving back and forth between neighbors. Mar says, V'lach lufei lo chashinan. Again, you keep justifying these swap outs because of context. Do we not worry about it? V'atanya, eshet chaver tochenet im eshet amaretz v'zman shehit meya. The way Rashi explains it over here is, the wife of a chaver can mill along with the Eshet Amaretz when the Eshet Chaver is Tmei'a. Aval lo bizman shehi tehora. Not in a case where she is tehora. Shimon Elazar omer, af bizman shehi tmei'a, lo titchom. Even when she is Tmei'a, she should not join in the milling. Mipnei shechaverta, notenet la v'ochelet. Because the friend gives it to her to eat. Meaning that we are worried about the Eshet Amaretz giving over to the Eshet Chaver and handing her food to eat. So Rashi, in explaining the position of the Tanakama, and Rabbi Shimon Elazar says that the Tanakama says that when she is Tmeya, then she will keep herself a distance, an arm's length from any contact with the food. She's helping the mill, to work the mill with her friend, her neighbor, the Eshet Amaretz, and in doing so, she's engaged in the food preparation. But she knows that she is Tmeya, and when she is Tmeya, she will take precautions not to come into contact with the food. Those precautions will also help her keep a distance from eating the food because she already has a certain amount of distance or hazard in her behavior that will protect her from coming to eat the items that are there. If she was Tohra, and then she would be fully engaged, and she wouldn't worry about touching the food or engaging in the food items, there we would worry about it that she might come to eat it as well. So that's the Tanakama's view as to why there's a difference between a Tmeya and a Tohra. Shimon Elazar comes along and says, doesn't matter whether she's Tmeya or Tohra, because we worry about the Eshet Amaretz handing it to her, giving it to her, and then the problem of theft in this case. So even though she's created a certain amount of distance or barrier between her and the food, the Eshet Amaretz is going to bridge that gap by giving her the food and bringing her the food. And so Rabbi Shimon Elazar says, just because she's Tmeya and distanced herself is not going to help in this situation, and we won't let the Eshet Chaver help out the Eshet Amaretz no matter what. Hashta migzal gazla, here she's willing to steal, chalufe miboyi, we're going to not worry about her swapping it out. Rashi claims that she's stealing from her husband. She's working with her husband's materials, her husband's food. Maybe her husband will permit her to eat from it, but he doesn't justify or allow her to hand over food to other people. And here she is handing over to this Eshet Chaver food, so she's stealing from her husband to give to someone else. So of course she would swap it out. So if she's willing to steal, she's definitely willing to swap it out. So the way Rashi explains it over here is that the Eshet Chaver, even though normally she wouldn't eat from something that was stolen, and she wouldn't eat from something that didn't have Tumot Masro taken off it, we worry about her forgetting. People do forget. She's in a context of helping out, working together in a partnership, and the person hands her something to eat while she's working there, it's a nice gesture. She might forget herself and end up eating the item. That we will be chosish for, that she might forget and eat the item. Then Rashi says, but what we don't do is think someone will forget and actively steal. Which means that the Eshet Ha'aretz, who is taking the food of her husband and handing it to someone else, unless we really believe that she is a thief or would be willing to steal and swap out, we would not be choshesh that she would forget herself and give it to someone else. A person might forget when they're given something or given a gift and lose themselves in that matter and then end up eating it. On the other hand, when they hand something to someone else, actively are taking something and giving it to someone else, that's not a matter that they forget. And therefore, she would only do that, ilav de chashuda regida begeza. She would only do such a thing if she was normally engaged in theft or in acting in a way that didn't consider the monetary ownership of the item. And that's what we're saying here. This Eshet Ha'aretz is clearly someone who's engaged in theft, doesn't worry about other people's ownership or whose item this is over here, and therefore she's willing to give it away to another party. So if she's going to steal, of course she would swap things out, because if she's actively stealing, then she clearly would swap out, where she could justify that she's not really stealing. The Gemara's answer is, Rav Yosef, Hatam Nami, Mori of Amra, Torah Midishei Ka'achil. So over there, again, she justifies the practice to herself. She wouldn't go ahead and steal just willy-nilly. She justifies this by saying that even an animal that works is entitled to eat. So this Eshet Chaver that's helping me, she certainly should be entitled to eat. So it's not that she's really stealing. In her mind, she's giving her what she's entitled to, or she's taking what she's entitled to give to this woman. She doesn't look at her, view it as being theft. And so that way, again, we wouldn't consider her to be a thief. We wouldn't consider her that she would steal in other contexts. It's only in this unique context where she has a justification for it that she give it to the other woman to eat. So Tosfot takes a number of issues with this explanation of Rashi, the first of which is the location of this Braita. The Bali Tosfot claimed that this Braita is found in Masechet Taarot. It's never found in a Mishnah in Taarot. It might be in a different wording in a Tosefta in Taarot, but according to Tosfot, where it's found in Taarot, he says it doesn't make any sense. He says that it should be in Demai. The way Rashi is explaining it, it's a problem of Ama'aretz, not a problem of Taarot. So why isn't Tosefta in Taarot and not in Demai? In addition, the fact that we worry about her stealing, quote-unquote, from her husband in order to give to the Eshet Chaver, we have a general principle when it comes to husband and wife interactions. Even in their day, where all the ownership belonged to the husband, and the wife needed the husband's permission in order to utilize the item, nevertheless, we know, Ein zeg zela dena bal makpid bedavar muat. In that type of relationship of a husband and wife, the husband is not makpid on small items or small amounts. So even though you need permission from the husband to do things with the food materials, nevertheless, for small items, he knows that his wife is working with it. He knows she might give away a little bit either to an ani or to another person, and he is mochel on that. And how can you claim that she is being gozel or husband by giving to the Eshet Chaver when it's a minute amount, which the husband normally would be mochel on? And he brings evidence to that from the Gemara in Bava Kamma that you're allowed to accept stakah from Nashim if it's a small amount, because we know that the husbands are mochel on those small amounts. V'gamze dochak ma'od. It's also a big dochak what Rashi differentiated between the Eshet Chaver, who forgets herself and allows herself to eat that which the Eshet Ha'aretz is giving her, whereas the Eshet Ha'aretz is giving to her, doesn't forget herself, quote-unquote, and she's considered to be an active thief. And he says that distinction, that the Eshet Ha'aretz is an active thief, and the Eshet Chaver is just forgetting, that distinction does not seem strong to him. And the last question that he raises with regards to Rashi is, how is this Eshet Chaver helping out the Eshet Ha'aretz? This is Misayeya the Ovrei Avera. And that's because we have principles in other places that the Eshet Ha'aretz, who's working with the dough, is going to cause it to become Tmei'ah, which is going to ruin it for Challah and for the Hafrashot that take place afterwards. And if you're helping her, then you're Mitzayeya, the Ovrei Avera. You're helping her in the process of doing something that is going to lead to being Mitamah, the Challah that will be Mafrash from this. And you're not allowed to engage in it. There are different stages of preparation, whether you're allowed to help her and stages where you're no longer allowed to help her. And over here, it doesn't seem to make any distinction, which would imply that you are helping out someone do something wrong. Therefore, they bring an alternate explanation from the Rabbeinu Chananel and the Rabbeinu Tam, that the Braita is speaking about a case of a tvua of chaver. It's speaking about the tvua of someone who is makpid on shumot, masrot, makpid on tuman tara, zman shehit meya. When the wife of the Am Haaretz is tmeya, then machzeket atzmak tmeya, shehazi nizheret milegabe tvua. If the woman is coming into the house or she's working with the grains, if she holds herself to be tmeya, meaning that she presents herself as being tmeya at that time, then she can come into the house, she can interact, and we don't worry about the fact that she came into contact with the tvua and made it tmeya, because the fact that she knows she's tmeya and presents herself as tmeya, she will keep a distance between her and the grains. On the other hand, when she carries herself and considers herself to be Torah, then she's not careful about touching these items, and they would be considered to be tmeya. If you leave them there, we can assume she did touch them, she did come into contact with these items, and she made them tmeya, because an Am Haaretz is considered tmeya for a chaver, because they're not makpi, they don't do things properly with regards to tumah and tara. So therefore we would, even when she is Torah, worry about her coming into contact with the items, because to her, she doesn't think there's anything wrong with her touching it, so she will touch it, not thinking there's anything wrong with that. But that will have impact for the chaver, that it will be mitama. But that's the Tanakhama's distinction. If she is tmeya, then it's fine. If she is Torah, then it's problematic. Along comes Rabbi Shimon Elazar of Omer, even in a time where she considers herself tmeya, she should not mill for the chaver, because her friend, another Eshet Am Haaretz, thinks that she is Torah and gives her to eat. Meaning that there'll be other women that are there, and the other women will think that she is Torah, or consider her to be Torah, and they will give her to eat. We don't worry about her touching it or coming to contact with it, because she considers herself Tmeya. But then we do worry about others handing it over to her and she consuming it. And again, over there, she's stealing from the Balabait. It's the Chaver, her husband. This is something she's working for, and she's taking it and giving it to this Eshet Am Haaretz. So there, if she's willing to steal, then we should worry about her swapping it out. The answer is that she's moraet there. Here's somebody working. If they work, they're entitled to food. Just like an animal is entitled to eat while they're working, and therefore she justifies taking that which belongs to the chaver, that belongs to the balabait, and handing it to the poel over here, who is an eshet Am Haaretz, that's tmeya. She justifies doing that because of the fact that she's working here. And therefore, it is a justified stealing, and she wouldn't steal in general if she couldn't justify or think in her head that it was something that was okay. So that's the way the Balei Tosfot learn it, and that way it only involves the Eshet Am Haaretz, both in the justification as well as the question as to what she's doing over there, and there's never an Eshet Chaver that's involved in any process that would necessarily be considered an Aveira. And it's all a question of how she conducts herself when she thinks she's tmeya, Torah. So all of those add up to a situation in which it would seemingly be that she was willing to steal. And the answer again is that she justifies her position and she wouldn't steal outright. And now we have another case that conforms to this style again of someone who is saved from a mistake. And that is Heid Rabbi Yoshua ben Zaruz, ben Chamiv, shel Rabbi Meir. Rabbi Meir's brother-in-law, Rabbi Yehuda ben Zaruz, who is the son of Rabbi Meir's father-in-law, Lifnei Rabbi, he brings his testimony before Rabbi, al Rabbi Meir, describing something that Rabbi Meir did. Basically, he was telling on Rabbi Meir, she'achal aleh she'yerek be'beit shan. He ate a leaf, a vegetable leaf in Beit Shan, without taking off shumot and masrot. Ve'ite Rabbi et Beit Shan kula ayado. And based on this testimony of what Rabbi Meir did, Rabbi was then willing to be matir Beit Shan and say Beit Shan is no longer chayav in Shumot u'masrot. Chabru alav echav u'beit aviv, his brothers, his family, his father's household ganged up on him. Amrulo, makom shavutecha v'avot avutecha narogu bo isur. The Nisiim and the Tamei Chachamim that came before you all said that Beit Shan is a sur and requires that you take off shumot and masrot from the produce that is there. Now, atatzin ogbo heter, you're going to release it from the obligation of having shumot and masrot mufrash from them? So, darshlan mikrazeh, he brought them this pasuk to justify his position. V'kitei nachash ha-nechoshet asher asa Moshe. It says about Chizkiyahu HaMelech that he crushes up, he destroys the nachash ha-nechoshet that was made by Moshe Rabbeinu. Kiyara imim ha'ema, I use B'nai Yisrael makatrim lo. Because until that point in time, B'nai Yisrael worshipped the nachash ha-nechoshet, they made into an avodah zarah, and they were bringing, whether it was incense, spices, korbanot, to it, v'yikra lo nechushtan. And they had a name for this avodah zarah. Efshar ba'asa v'lo bi'aro, ba'yoshofat v'lo bi'aro. Is it possible, these are other good kings of Yehuda that preceded Chizkiyahu HaMelech, who wiped out all avodah zarah when they were in power. So Asa and Yoshafat, Yoshafat we bumped into in yesterday's daf and the day before, who is considered to be a tzaddik and wiped out avodah zarah. How is it possible that they came along and wiped out all avodah zarah and they left the nechash and nechoshet below biaro? They didn't remove it. Hello, kol avodah zarah shvolam, Asa Yoshafat biarum. Any avodah zarah that was present, they got rid of. They cleared out avodah zarah from Malchut Yehuda. Ela, so why was it left over? Makom inichu lo avotav leitgaber bo. Their forefathers left him a place to make himself famous. That's what Rashi says. Behem yigdal shemam. So that they left him an opportunity to do something of significance so that he would also gain a name amongst the generations because of the actions that he takes. So from Rashi, it sounds like they left some of avodah zarah. Even though they should have wiped it out, or they could have wiped it out, they wanted to leave room for Chizkiyahu to have a chance to wipe out avodah zarah, or to wipe out this item, do something of significance. It's a very difficult idea to get your head around, and the Baal Tosafot already say that. And therefore they give an alternate explanation, which is somewhat helpful, but doesn't really flow through the entire of the Gemara, which is V'yish Lamar. The Bishlama Ochin Gabi Nechash HaNechoshet, the Fishin HaSel Pi HaDibur, Tohu Bo Rishonim. It's not just that they left over avodah zarah for Chizkiyahu to take care of. His forefathers had a different calculation or consideration. They said Moshe Rabbeinu made it. How can we destroy something that Moshe Rabbeinu made? Shaya sur lebaro, and they thought it was restricted against wiping it out, and therefore they left it over. Chizkiyahu comes along and says, it doesn't matter that it was made by Moshe Rabbeinu. If it leads to takala, if it leads to avodah zarah, I'm going to wipe it out. So what the Baal Tosfot say is that there was a mitigating consideration for Asa and Yoshafat, which made them reticent to wipe out the nachash ha-nechoshet, destroy nachash ha-nechoshet. And therefore they, maybe mistakenly, decided not to wipe it out. But that left room for Chizkiyahu HaMelech. So it's not that they intentionally left it over, but rather there was a precipitating event because of their considerations that left it over for Chizkiyahu HaMelech. Chizkiyahu HaMelech comes along and says, I don't think that that's the right consideration, and you need to wipe it out anyway because B'nai Yisrael are following it and making it into a avodah zarah. And so therefore, Rabbi says the same thing about himself. Ani makom enichu li avotai litgader bo. My forefathers also left me a place to make my mark. So the way Rashi reads it is that they left Beit Shan Asur, even though technically it was Mutar, because they wanted to give Rebbe room to make his mark and to give a big landmark psak to say that Beit Shan's not Chayav in Trumot to Masrot. That's the way Rashi would read it. According to the Baal Tosafot, it's a little harder to read over here. Because over here, what was the mitigating factor that they considered beforehand? So the truth is, you could argue that the mitigating factor was that the Minog of Isur. Because we have a principle in the fourth parak in the Gemara Mitzachim that something that a person is noig isur in it, you're not allowed to be matir in front of them. So over here, the people of Beit Shan have been noig isur here, and therefore it wouldn't have been appropriate for someone to be matir it. Maybe that was a consideration of the forefathers of Rabbi. Rabbi comes along and says that's not the right consideration here because we only say we are not allowed to be matir something in front of someone who is noig isur is if they understand why it's asur. If they understand the reason they're doing this is a chumrah, not because of the Ikar Adin. But over here, the people of Beit Shan were under the mistaken impression that they were chayavim in Trumot HaMasrot. They weren't just doing it mechumrah. They were doing it Ikar Adin. And that is what's called a minog ta'ut, because they don't really understand the premise for why they're doing it. And therefore, that's why Rabbi was allowed to be matir. Is that why he justified his being matir it, even though they had been noeg isur? So again, maybe that's the way to explain what the Baal Tosafot mean over here, that there was this mitigating factor that they were noeg by an isur. and they didn't want to be matirit, the rabbi comes along and says the minhag yisur is premised on the wrong reason. They think it's mikar din. They don't think it's just a chumrah. And I need to make sure they understand that mikar din, they are patur over there, and that you're allowed to do. And that's why he was matir Beit Shan. I'm going to come back and discuss this issue a little more with regards to Beit Shan. I just want to finish up the Gemara first. Mikan, from here you learn that Talmid Chacham shamar davar halacha shei mezikin oto. That if a Talmid Chacham comes along and says a davar halacha, you shouldn't dismiss him. You shouldn't just pass it by as being something maybe he made a mistake about, but rather you should accept it. Bamrila ein maznichim oto. We do not spurn that which they are said. Bamrila ein mazchichin oto. But we don't say that you consider him to be mistaken because he was a little too haughty. Manda mar mazichin, the one who says that the lashon over here is mazichin, kedichtiv lo izach choshen me al eifod. You're not allowed to have the choshen bounce away from the eifod. That's why you have the til tchelet and the tabaot that allow you to tie it down and hold it down. But there, izach means to push away or separate. And that's what it means over here. You don't push away, you don't separate out a Talmud Chacham that comes with a testimony that seems to go against that which is the standard or that which everybody thinks. Or mandamar in maznichin, you don't spurn or abandon them. Dichtiv ki lo yiznach leolam Hashem. And Eicha says Hashem will not spurn us or abandon us forever. So over here, you don't spurn or abandon a Talmud that comes up with something that seemingly goes against the status quo. Mandamar mazchichin is the tznan. Mishurabu zrichuche alev, the Mishnah in Sotah that says, when they became plentiful, those that were gvoei lev, those that were haughty, rabu machloket b'Yisrael. Then machloket started to expand in Klal Yisrael, because these people felt that they were so good that they didn't need to review that which their Rebbe taught them. They didn't need to ask questions. And therefore mistakes start to happen because people are way too haughty. And those mistakes then precipitate machloket because they're not learning properly. And similarly over here, you don't say that the Talmud who's coming and giving you this information is haughty. And since he is haughty, he got the memra wrong or he got the evidence wrong, and we're not going to believe him. Or the Rashi brings a second lashon, which is that we don't raise it up and toss it out, that which he's giving you or saying over to you. So the point they're making is that all of a sudden Rabbi Yeshua ben Zarus comes with testimony about Rabbi Meir, which goes against conventional wisdom. You would have thought just to dismiss what he says. He's either somebody that was a little too haughty, somebody who didn't get the shmua right, someone, for whatever reason, we think that he doesn't have the right information, and you could have dismissed him. Nevertheless, you see from Rabbi that he accepted it, and he accepted it to the point where he paskin aloha based on it. And from there you see that you should never turn away information from any Talmud, because every piece of information can be important, and it's something that needs to be considered in the decision-making of the Rebbe. We're going to stop here, 9 lines down on the top of Zayin Amud Aleph, but I just want to discuss the issue of Beit Shan over here, because Rashi says something that is a diuk out of what the Gemara is saying, and has major implications which the Balei Tosafot disagree with. And that is, Rashi says over here, when it comes to the story of Beit Shan, it makes it sound like if they made it into Chutz La'aretz, there would be no din of Trumot Masrot. But if it was Eretz Yisrael, there would be a din of Trumot Masrot. But we know that there's a chiyuv of Trumot Masrot even in Chutz La'aretz. So how do you explain the fact that even if Beit Shan is classified as Chutz La'aretz, why was Rabbi Meir eating it without Trumot Masrot? And why did Rabbi paskin that you don't need to take off Trumot Masrot? So Rashi makes a distinction between the Gan Tirosh and Yitzhar. The Gan Tirosh and Yitzhar are grains, olives and olive oil, grapes and wine. Those items require Trumot and Masrot to be taken off Mida Oraita, Mina Torah. So what Rashi says is that if in Eretz Yisrael you require Trumot and Masrot Mida Oraita, then in Chutz La'aretz you require it Mida Rabbanan. But if your Trumot and Masrot in Eretz Yisrael are only Mida Rabbanan, like Trumat Yerek, then in Chutz La'aretz, there's no din de Rabbanan to take off Trumot Masrot of Yerek. And so in that way, Rashi explains why Rabbi Meir was eating Yerek in Beit Shan and not worried about Trumot Masrot Mida Rabbanan in Chutz La'aretz. On the other hand, the Balei Tosafot disagree with this fundamentally, and they try to bring a number of places of evidence of the fact that Trumot Masrot were taken off Mida Rabbanan, even on items that are Mida Rabbanan. So he brings a number of proofs of that item. Rabbeinu Tam suggests that maybe over here the Gemara is speaking about Demai. And with regards to Demai, there's no din of Trumot and Masrot and Chutz Laretz, because the whole Takanah, the Gzeira of Demai, was in Eretz Yisrael, not in Chutz Laretz. But when it comes to Trumot and Masrot Midrabanan, in Ochanami, you'd be Chayav in Chutz Laretz, just like you would be Chayav inside of Eretz Yisrael. The Balei Tosafot then reject that view of the Rabbeinu Tam because they questions whether he's really right, because it seems from the Yerushalmi that Rashi's distinction is actually correct. And this din is not just a din in Demai, but a din in Trumot and Masrot Vadai. And that there really are a three-tier distinction, which is those things that are Chayav Midoraita in Eretz Yisrael are Chayav Bechutz La'aretz Midrabanan. Those things that are Dirabanan, Yerek, which is completely Dirabanan in Eretz Yisrael, in Chutz La'aretz, you don't take off Trumot or Asrot at all. And there's an in-between status, which is Peirot. Peirot, according to some Rishonim, are Chayavin in Trumot Masrot Midoraita in Eretz Yisrael. According to many Rishonim, including the Balei Tosafot, they're only Chayavin Midrabanan in Eretz Yisrael, but they have an Asmachta from the Pasuk. As opposed to Yerek, which is completely Dirabanan, Peirot at least have an Asmachta in the Kra Midrabanan in Eretz Yisrael. And therefore, in Chutz La'aretz, they require Trumot to be taken off of them, but not Ma'aser. So they took off Trumah Gdola and not Ma'aser Rishon. And that way you have a three-tiered grouping of Trumot and Ma'aserot. And again, it seems from this Yerushalmi to corroborate what Rashi says over here. Then we have to then deal with the fact as to why we today don't take off Trumot and Ma'aserot in Chutz La'aretz. And that's what the Balei Tosafot say, that Vahi the Yerushalmi the Kamar. Now what Yerushalmi says, Yabo Rubim Bitlum Samchin and Achshav. We rely on that today. Sheinanu Mafrishim Trumot Ma'aserot. That's why we don't take off Trumot and Ma'aserot. You see from the Balei Tosafot, they have a Havamina that in France and in Germany, they should be taking off Trumot and Ma'aserot, at least from Dagan, Tirosh, V'Yitzar, maybe even from Peirot, because that's a Din D'Rabbanan in Chutz La'aretz. And why aren't we doing that, or why aren't we practicing that? She says, we base it on the Yerushalmi that says that later on the Rubim came and undid or unwound this Takana D'Rabbanan, and there's no longer an obligation to bring Trumot and Ma'aserot. Rabbeinu Tam Mifaresh, Rabbeinu Tam gives a different reason, which is that we have no private ownership in Chutz La'aretz, because you're allowed to lease the land from the government. If you pay the task, if you pay the tax, then you're allowed to stay there and use the land. But if you don't pay the tax, you're not allowed to stay on the land, which means that it's really government-owned land, and you're renting it from the government. And for that reason, we don't take off Trumot U'Ma'aserot, because we don't have private ownership of the land. And based on that, even in the time of the Gemara, the only fields that would be giving Trumot and Ma'aserot would be fields where there was private ownership, and you didn't have to pay the taska, you didn't have to pay some sort of tax in order to give permission to use the land, or basically it was that there was private ownership. And then he gives the other answer, which the Baitos will give in many other places in Shas, which is, Od Yesh Lefaresh, Shema Rechokim Eretz Yisrael Kamonu Lo Tiknu Chachamim. The Chachamim only instituted Trumot and Ma'aserot for the areas or the countries adjacent to Eretz Yisrael. Places that are so far away, like France and Germany, they were never under this Takana D'Rabbanan. Because in the Yerushalmi it says, certain locations are the borders of Eretz Yisrael, and from those places onward we don't worry about Demai. And he suggests that maybe not only do you not worry about Demai, maybe you don't worry about Trumot and Ma'aserot at all. So you see over here that the Balei Tosafot clearly have a Havamina that there should be Trumot and Ma'aserot taken off Midrabanan. And they're trying to justify the practice that they have of not taking off Trumot and Ma'aserot, either because the Yerushalmi says that the Chachamim came along and were mivatel that practice, or because we don't really have private ownership of the land, it really belongs to the king, and we are just sharecroppers, leaseholders on the land, or because of the fact that the Takanah didn't apply to countries or areas of land that were far away from Eretz Yisrael.